This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on.
You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
I should know it's on.
It's on.
Hey, 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 hey.
What is up, Cut to It fam?
How are you?
What up, what up, what up?
All right, let's get straight into it.
Backstage Joe, what's up, man?
What's going on, fellas?
Hey, we had an unbelievable weekend.
Didn't we?
Yes, we did. We played golf this weekend.
The Cut to It Invitational.
Yes. none of us made the cut.
No.
We only made it to Saturday.
Maybe Joe did.
Nah. We got that green ribbon, that participation award.
You're right.
All right, so we're driving back from a little golf off trip, and it's about a four-hour drive. We're not going to say where we were. We don't want to lose any more beach folks that we are in. We lost the Myrtle Beach folks.
We don't want to keep the streak going.
Losing the coast.
So driving back, and it's a four-hour drive, so we're about 2 hours in. It's like, hey, let's stop. Stop, grab something. What does anybody want? So, you know, you're on the road. And
you know how it is when you're on a road trip. Yeah.
Got a few options,
right? They all pretty much the same. So.
Go through a drive-thru.
Go through the line. So we order. Welcome to such and such. May I help you? Yes. I'm driving. Joe's there. G's there. And they all rattle off one by one what they want. So I say, hey, I would like this combo.
What else?
What else?
Joe says, hey, I'll take a sandwich only.
Yes. Interrupting.
Then, after Joe says that, Gerard orders the exact same thing as a combo.
We made it easy.
Yeah.
We should have known it was going to go astray, because the second you got a syllable out of your... What else?
Yeah.
Hey, I would like a...
What else?
Yep. And also...
What else?
Yep.
What kind of sauce?
What else? Yep.
That's how it went. So... Thank you. Here is my amount.
I knew it was trouble when you pulled around.
$14.91.
Mm-hmm. Total.
That was my total. $14.91. Drive up. I hand a girl a 10 and a 5.
That's
easy cash transaction.
15.
Okay. Easy cash transaction.
Now I'm going to write this out because I had to rethink it when I did the transaction.
Let's back into that math, shall we?
$15, a 10 and a 5.
Right.
$14.91. Okay. One and one cancel out. Four cannot go in 2, 5. So
you doing old school.
I got to.
OG math.
Yeah, I have to.
This is where we already are separated.
Yep.
In which regard? This is how math is introduced.
It is.
Continue with the story.
All right. So I'm doing this math. So 4-0. Okay, not make that cancel out the 0, 9. Bang. Make that 0 a 10. 10 minus 1 is 9. 9 cents. Now, I knew this. I knew this, but I'm doing it the second day. This happened yesterday, second day, in case maybe I misjudged her calculating skills. Because let me tell you, she used a calculator.
On her phone.
Yes.
So she comes back after I hand her the money. She comes back and says, you got 91 cents?
Well, to be fair, first, she turned her back on us when she handed her the money. And, like, we were just staring at her like, you.
It was like a showdown.
Corral.
Because I looked at him, I said, I hope she's going to give me my change. Now, why is change important to me? I'm a change guy. I like to have the change, and then I take it home, put in my change, and then every 6 months, I cash it, and I put it into dollars. Listen. I'm a change counter. I pick up change off the...
But what was the change that she gave you?
Oh, she...
What was the change that she gave you?
She gave me 3 cents.
Three.
So we just...
Hold on. After I asked, I said, can I get my change? She goes... No, she said...
And now we've backed into this math already.
Oh, she goes... Hold on. Sidetrack Sally. Stop it. She goes, you going to give me 91 cent? I said, excuse me, I gave you 15. She goes, and, oh. I said, you actually owe me. How much change do you owe me?
Then she brings out the calculator.
She gives me 3 cents, and I said, 3 cents? Because when she gave it to me, I was like, are they giving out bitcoins? Does this count?
Is this Satoshi?
I know this is a podcast, but not only did she give us 3 cents wrong, she finger rolled it right into Steve's hand to like with an attitude, like, here's your 3 cents.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I called her, and I was like, hold on. And so I told her, not aggressively, I said, in my mind, I'm going, all right, don't be rude. I said, how much change were you supposed to give me? She goes, huh? First of all, if you you can hear.
Yeah, that's how my mama told me.
Huh? I said, how much change were you supposed to give me? I gave you 15. How much was it? $14.91.
She could not do it.
So then she brings out, so she turns her back, but she didn't turn her back quick enough as she was busting out her iPhone with a pink case to do the calculation. And so she was like, well, hold on. She used her calculator.
And still got it wrong.
She did not know how much change to give me.
Nope, no clue.
So then she finger rolls me the change. Luckily.
George Gervin style.
She did, man.
Nice, luckily, I'm such a profound athlete, I caught all of it.
Yep.
Slight flex.
A little bit.
So I catch it. Right? And then I'm like, can I get 2 straws, please? So she gives me the straws as if like, here, child, yeah, here. Be gone.
Yep. Go, bye. Gives go
me
play.
She gives me the change. We get the food. I drive
and
off.
And you were hot.
Yeah.
He was
fired up.
Just like he is now.
Fired
he is
yeah.
still fired.
Right? So then I drive off. I get on the on-ramp. And Joe goes.
Backstage goes.
And no, Joe didn't. I said, hold on. Damn it, she got me.
Yep.
She forgot Joe's sandwich. She didn't even give us the right food.
Nope. Broke it off on us. I know.
Petty.
I know it was on purpose.
It was petty. Oh, so, you know it was petty.
So here's what I did. I took 2 french fries to take my supplement, and Joe ate my lunch because he didn't have a meal.
Team player.
I was no longer hungry.
He was mad. He was mad.
This dude ranting is funny.
You know why I was mad? Do you know why I was mad?
Enlighten us.
Because all of that nonsense that she did, it was on her. It wasn't my fault she couldn't count. It wasn't my fault.
It wasn't
my fault she needed her iPhone to count up what I did on a piece of paper. And then she gets mad at me and stiffs me my sandwich. But guess what, my friends? I cleaned out my car when I got home. And guess what I found?
What?
My receipt with the store number.
Dun, 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 dun.
Because guess who's going to get a free meal? Guess who's going to get a free meal? I am. Here it comes.
Make sure you add an extra chicken sandwich on that for me.
Right.
I'm getting a whole damn meal. I'm emailing.
Look at you.
I'm going to email suchandsuch.com because, one, I need employees that can count or at least read the cash register.
I mean, it's right there for a reason.
It does all.
It's right there for a reason.
I've worked at fast food. Now, this is not Steve's trying to be all high and mighty. I worked at Taco Bell.
It's an integral part of your story.
Yes. I worked at Taco Bell. You have papers. Mm-hmm. You have calculators. And you got that big old register that has all the menus where
it's
you can
punch
it in.
It's even color-coded sometimes.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe she was colorblind. Possibly. That could be. But.
No shade to the colorblind listeners.
Correct.
Whatever. Yep. So I'm going to get me a free. I'm going to get the whole meal free.
Do you? Fire the place up.
No, I just want my free meal. I just want my sandwich that I paid for that she didn't give me.
I'm used to it.
Who we got?
Our guest today, Quincy Anunwa, drafted out of Nebraska. He spent his 5 years with the New York Jets and really an all-around stand-up guy, advocate for mental health, Quincy Anunwa. Quincy, coming up, you're going to take part in Get Iced Up. So, Smitty, go ahead with the first one.
All right, here we go. So, we go with the easy one. Favorite cartoon growing up?
Oh, man. Favorite cartoon? There's so many.
I never saw that show. It's so many.
But you put me on the spot, man. I mean, look, I probably age myself, man. You know, but the last one I just saw that I remembered, because it was on, I think it's on Netflix or something, it was like Proud Family or something. That brought me back. But then if I go way back, Proud Family, you know what I mean?
It was like a black family Nickelodeon. Was it on Nickelodeon?
It was something like that, man.
I think so.
All right, so here's a good one too. Have you ever sent a text message to the wrong person?
Oh, multiple times, man.
I got anxiety just thinking about it.
Man, multiple times. And the worst part is now, whenever you do it, anytime you send a text, you're always like real cautious. Like you got to make sure, okay, is this the right sender? Making sure you're not sending it to the wrong person again.
I've sent a text to my wife, whose name is Ace in my phone, Angie, Ace, to, you know him, Adam.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is right underneath.
Woo! Yeah.
So and it was a husband and wife.
I was going to say, I've done it in reverse.
No, it was a husband and wife, like, hey, I'm on the way home.
Yeah, yeah.
I got the food, you the dessert. And it was that.
Yeah.
And Adam goes in the text, man, that's cool, Steve, but I don't really want to know what you and Angie got playing. So embarrassing.
Your stomach sends to your feet, doesn't it?
Bro, I was like, no. But at first, I was kind of hot.
Yeah.
That wife didn't reply. I'm like, that.
You were mad.
I'm like, at first, I'm like, boo, you. I mean, yeah,
they need like a recall. They need a recall function on text.
I hit that thing.
Yeah.
Right? Said I'm dinner. Mm-hmm. Bang, bang. You know, I set it up. Yeah, I mean, of course you don't know what it's like, but light skin, you know how we do it. Right?
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Bro, nope. It was Adam. So embarrassing.
Yeah. I'm embarrassed for you right
and
now.
Then a couple of weeks, it happened to be about a month later, me and Adam got together. We had a business thing and he brought it up. So no lunch. So, all right, here we go. Last one, and then we're gonna jump right into your story, who you are. If you can make a rule for a day and everyone had to follow, what would it be?
Oh man. If I could make a rule for a day and everyone had to follow it. Be real on social media, man. Be real on social media.
We'll get to that. Keep that same energy later on.
Let's cut right into it. Let's hear your story. But I want to get this out of the way just immediately because I know I'm in journalism now and I'm a journalist.
You're in the media now.
I'm a media guy. But I have always struggled with, I'm going to call you Quincy, but we want to know, we want you to pronunciate. Mm-hmm. And also explain your full name, your government name, right? Because everybody knows you as Quincy. Some people butcher it, but really just what is the meaning behind the name and all that stuff?
All right, I got you. All right, so my actual government name is Onuche Quincy Enunwa, right? So Onuche is my first name. Onuche.
Okay.
And it's spelled O-N-O-C-H-I-E. And it's an Igbo name, Nigerian. My parents are from Nigeria. It means replacement. It was like junior. The real meaning of it is replacement, but it's just basically like junior. My dad named me after my grandpa. So he died a year before I was born. And so they named me that. My parents are both from Nigeria. My dad came maybe like 8 to 10 years before I was born. And my mom actually came like a month before I was born. So that's probably not even safe at all, right? And they're both from Nigeria. Brought me up in the culture, all of that. And, you know, I was wearing the dasikis. I was wearing all of that when I was growing up.
They came over here, and I'm trying to dumb it down for myself. Mm-hmm. I want that journey.
Yeah.
The transportation, the journey of how they got here, if you even know, you know, how they got here, where did they come from?
They both flew. My dad flew, and he came here first and went to school. And then my mom flew with me while she was pregnant. She actually, so she was so pregnant, her stomach was so big, her belly was so big, that she had a doctor write a note that said that she was holding twins, when actually she was just like 8 months pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever it takes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so so she came and had me, and then she went and got her nursing degree. And my dad, he got his business degree, and he started working at Walmart. And he was like a store manager for a really long time. From Walmart, he dropped Walmart and became an entrepreneur. Now he owns like two mailing stores in Southern California. American dream right there, honestly. They did whatever they could to get me over here, and they've been working hard ever since.
How many other siblings? Are you the oldest, youngest?
Yeah, so it's me and then my two younger sisters. One is 26. The other one is 20.
It's open class now. I think she is.
That's when you know you got to think about people. I got that brother.
You know, sometimes that stuff just slips in mind a little bit. I had to think back real quick.
And so you're growing up, you say you're wearing dashikis, you're from I can take it, you're wearing who you are, your culture.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. Yeah,
how was that received growing up, you know, in Southern California, where there's a ton of cultures there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. However, there isn't a lot of brothers walking around in Daishiki either.
No.
So I'm assuming pretty interesting at first, because outside of your home, it was normal.
Yep.
But then inside of your home is normal. Outside of your home, you probably got some looks and I'm assuming.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we weren't wearing dashikis every day, but, you know, it was still part of us. You know, we wore it during events and stuff like that. But overall, I'd say, you know, especially back then, you know, you had the jokes and everything, African booty scratcher, all those different jokes that people would tell.
Boys in the hood always strike.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So, you know, you got those jokes. That's really, for me, you know, and then on top of that, you know, people didn't really take the time to really pronounce my name correctly. So that was actually part of the reason why I went by my middle name, was because, you know, it felt as though people tried to just kind of wash away my culture. And I just kind of fell into that, right? Like by going by Quincy and then just accepting that that's my name. It was definitely like, it was an interesting childhood, interesting growth pattern, you know, to be Nigerian amongst a bunch of people from different cultures, but mainly just, you know, Black culture, Mexican culture. Like, that's really the dominant and where I was growing up. So I think in order to kind of assimilate, right, for me, it was like, well, let me go by my English middle name.
Inside your house, and I've got some friends who are Nigerian, inside your house, what's maybe the pressure, what's the experience of having Nigerian parents while you're in the U.S.? Take us on that journey.
Yeah. Well, the biggest one is education. You know, it's a big push on education. They try to make sure that, you know, they brought us here, essentially. So they want us to take advantage of every benefit that we can get being in this country. So, you know, growing up, we you know, we had to get the good grades. You know, we had to make sure that if we were doing sports, that we were also still excelling in school. You know, so I think, you know, every parent is like that, but, you know, I'm just speaking on my experience on that. You know, they really push that.
We have to take a break, and more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut To It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
So growing up in Los Angeles, how did those two worlds, Nigerian and Los Angeles in the 90s, how did that shape and impact your view on the world? Because you had two different views. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, you would probably, you can say it was an advantage, but as a child, yeah, you probably saw it as a disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. So actually, we were maybe like 45 to an hour. Moreno Valley is where I grew up. So it's about maybe an hour east down the 60 freeway. But it's essentially, you know, a lot of people came from LA to go live in Moreno Valley. So it was definitely an interesting, you know, upbringing, you know, to say the least. You see so many different things. But I think part of it, what's funny is that, you know, my parents kind of shielded me from a lot of things. They put me in a private school, you know, so for a good amount of my childhood, I was in a private school, you know, so there was a lot of things that I didn't see until I started going to public school. And then my life got flipped upside down.
In what way?
Do tell.
Right. You can't just leave us there.
Yeah. Cliffhanger.
No, I know. It's, you know, I mean, private school is a different lifestyle, man. It's there's no really way to explain it, you know. So when you go to public school, you know, you get a real taste. You know, I think what helped me a lot was just the fact that I was playing city ball, you know, football. So I got to see, you know, different ways people, you know, kind of acting and stuff. But, you know, when I got to high school, that's when I really started to see, you know, I got up close to like gang culture and all types of other things that I, you know, you see on TV, but it wasn't until I was actually in school and seeing stuff, I was like, bro, where am I at?
So do you think you were shielded in a way?
Definitely. In
private school?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, people talked about it, but nobody was really about it.
Was that shield enough for you at that moment? So when you got to public school, you had enough wherewithal to be able to separate yourself or at least be hesitant and not mm-hmm. jump all in immediately.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think, you know, when I see other people's stories, you know, theirs are different. So I can't say that this is just the blueprint, but I think for myself, it was helpful. You know, I kind of already had a lot of discipline. And part of it might have came mainly from my parents, but also, you know, from being in that school, I think that helped me as well. I don't know if I'll do the same thing for my kids, but, you know, I'm just speaking on my own experience.
So you're saying you wouldn't do it for your kids, meaning you wouldn't?
I wouldn't put them in private school.
Other than the money. I heard that money thing. You know, retired player too. Mine go to private school.
You got to look at that budget line item.
So this is my thing. My private school wasn't like a big private school where I could have gone there and then went to college and played ball there. Like, there was no chance of me being looked at. So everybody's private school experience is different. The one that I was at was not going to help me get to where I'm at now. So that's actually why I went to public schools, because, you know, everybody knew I had the talent, but I wasn't going to get anywhere being in that school. So I say, if it's a private school that can, you know, you can go to and still make it, then I might put them in there. But the route that I took, I wouldn't do that for my kids.
So you're talking just from a sports-related understanding, the journey of trying to give your child, if they pursue a professional or collegiate career, mm-hmm. that this helps them based on your own experience.
Exactly.
Man, so you're in high school, you know, you're at public school now, you're in the real life. When did you believe in playing in high school that you felt, I can possibly go to college and participate in football at that level, Division I?
Yeah. When I first got there, it was a struggle. You know, like I said before, the school that I was at, you know, they knew I was talented. You know, I got to a level where everybody was talented, really talented. So the first couple years, you know, I showed flashes. So you know, they put me out there. They saw me score some touchdowns. They knew I could play. But, you know, it was inconsistent. You know, it wasn't until, like, my senior year where I put it all together. And that's when I started to get the offers. And, you know, people started to really see that, you know, I can make it to college. And that's when I really started to believe it.
You're probably being looked at as you play football, not mm-hmm. soccer.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so this is funny. So I played soccer. And then really, I probably would have just continued to play soccer. And then when I was coming up, one of my good friends, he introduced me to Madden. So I went over to his house and started playing Madden. And I didn't know what I was doing, right? And so I remember I think I scored a touchdown, luckily. And I didn't know what to do next. So I asked him, what he did was he had me punt the ball instead of kick a field goal. Oh, I was pissed after
that. Oh, he played.
Wow. Exactly.
So you didn't, look, the rules, you didn't even know the rules of football when you playing Madden?
No, I didn't know what I was doing
well,
at all.
Well, first of all, you know he didn't know because he slipped that in. Right. This is what he slipped in and I let slide.
I ain't know anything about football.
I went over to my friend's house to play because let's play the narrative. Man, them Nigerians ain't letting y'all play. No games in the house.
Exactly.
Hey, those games are for those American kids who are lazy.
Go get a book.
Read a book.
Yeah.
Am I – is that correct?
Yeah, no. They took us to the library like every week.
Oh, yeah. I got Nigerian friends. I knew it.
I know my people.
Oh, show.
It was funny. I mean, you know, they try to push us to do that. But in terms of the video game, yeah. So I went over there, and that honestly, that's been my motivation from the beginning, man. Every time I think back about how I started playing football, I just always remember that story. Then I got into Pop Warner. I was playing Pop Warner, and from there, you know, that's where it just kind of took off. But I was playing soccer for a pretty long time at first.
What position did you play?
Oh, I can't even tell you, man, because I started playing football in fourth or fifth grade, so maybe forward. I played goalie for a little bit. I played goalie for a minute.
That's the boring.
And I was really all over the field, honestly. They just kind of threw me out there and was like, all right, go run.
So they treat you like an athlete.
Exactly.
Just go out there.
Hey, just go out there. Outrun Lil Johnny. Because you're in Marino mm-hmm. Valley, so you know what you're going up against.
Yeah.
Alex. Right.
Oh, that's the Marino Valley kind of.
I mean,
nah, it's pretty diverse.
At the time that you were growing up,
I don't know, y'all
though,
Cali guys always
playing soccer.
Yeah,
playing soccer in Marino Valley. Now it may be diverse, but that's soccer because I've experienced it here in Charlotte. Charlotte's crazy soccer, youth soccer academy, but it ain't a lot of brothers on the sidelines and in the games.
You're right.
Just being honest.
No, in Marino Valley, we had the everybody moved from LA because you know in the 90s that's when you know blacks and Mexicans were fighting. We had what was it, LA riots. So everybody was trying to get out of LA. So when I was coming up, everybody that was moving out of LA was moving towards the Inland Empire, Marino Valley, Riverside, all those places. So really, it was actually a lot of black people in Marino Valley growing up
playing soccer though.
Mexicans. It was Mexicans.
Got him. Playing soccer? Nah.
It was Mexicans playing soccer.
That was probably the first time when they said, hey, bro, we're going to call you Q or Quincy.
It started around there, yeah.
Let's see. What was the recruiting process for you specifically? Because we've had a few guys on here who's talked about their collegiate recruiting process. It's been different for everyone else. We've had Malcolm Jenkins on. He's talked about he got to Ohio State because his folks were visiting some family members at Ohio and signed him and his brother up for a football camp just to give them something to do in the summer. So I'm wondering – And from there, that's how you got a scholarship to Ohio State. Now, you got an offer to Nebraska. Mm-hmm. How was that process from
L.A. to Nebraska?
From Marino Valley, L.A., right, 45 minutes out of L.A. to the Midwest, Nebraska. That had to be interesting.
Talk about culture shock.
Right. Yeah, it was huge culture shock. Culture shock, weather shock, everything, man. I mean, it was a different life. I mean, I thought I was on a different planet. To be honest with you, when I first heard in Bradford, I really didn't even know where it was at, you know. So when I got there, you know, the first time I was there was for a game. So that's what really drew me in. You know, it's like, you don't see that type of stuff, right? Like, it's all in. Everybody loves football there, like literally the whole state. So I think, you know, it was just cool to see when I was out there that, you know, there was so much love for the football team, so much love for the games, sold out every game. They had like a 300 game sellout. You know, they just love ball there.
What ultimately sold you on picking Nebraska? Was it that game?
Yeah, no, the game. But honestly, you know, I didn't have a lot of offers. I had like 3 or 4. And so Nebraska was like one of the biggest ones. And I knew, you know, if I went to Nebraska, you know, out of all the other options I had, at least they were like a winning team. You know, the year before that, made it to the Big 12 championship. And actually the first year I was there, we made it to the Big 12 championship too. So I knew I would get more exposure going there than anywhere else.
What were some of those other schools, if you don't mind telling us?
Washington State.
Okay.
Washington State was another one. I got recruited by like Idaho State, like smaller schools over on the west side, west coast. And then for track, I got looked at by Miami. I liked track a lot more, honestly. I was a high jumper, and we did 4x1, triple jump. But it just didn't, you know, I didn't have all the tools, so it didn't work out for me as well.
What do you mean you didn't have all the tools?
I think if I could have had a little bit more like in-depth coaching, maybe filming how I was doing it, like, because I was a 6'9 high jumper, so I felt like I could get to 7 feet. You know, but my form just wasn't the best.
About a month after I got to Utah, University of Utah, I was ready to come home. I was homesick. The only thing that really the saving grace was we were so dang poor. My mom couldn't afford. She was like, look, Stevon, we don't have any money. Because my aunt, my grandmother, the people that scrounged up money to actually get me a one-way ticket to Utah.
Wow.
So I didn't, but I wanted to leave. So with me throwing myself out there, I can't imagine. Did you get homesick? Did you feel like it was a mistake going out there?
Yeah, no, I definitely was homesick. In terms of a mistake, you know, I just kind of tried to tell myself, you know, this is what I got to do. You know, I think it was the theme that was pushed for us, you know, with education was that I knew that this was the step I needed, whether it be for football or education, in order for me to, you know, I wanted to come back with something in my hand, you know. I wanted to come back with some type of accomplishment, right? So, you know, being there, I had my head focused on, you know, what I needed to do and what I felt I wanted to do and get out of it. So there was no like, oh, I want to come home. It was like, man, I got to do this, you know. I need to get this done.
In the recruiting process, what was the message your folks, your parents were sending you off with?
Basically what I was kind of just already thinking, you know, just, you know, work hard, stay out of trouble, you know, and do what these people that are now basically your caretakers basically tell you what to do, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, they're basically passing me off to them, you know, and that's actually not to kind of be off too much, but that's what's kind of crazy about this whole college, you know, recruiting stuff, man. They take you away from your home, you know, knowing that a lot of guys, you know, they coming from upbringings that are way completely different, and then they don't even really take care of you as much as they should when you get out there, you know. They sell you all these dreams, and then you get out there, and it's a completely different life.
It's got to be a transition. You're especially for you, you're a deep-rooted family guy, but you have one family, and now you've got to transition almost to a completely new family.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting transition, but luckily, you know, I actually had one of the guys that came there. I knew him in high school, so you know, we kind of we hung out a lot. You know, that was my guy. He's actually one of my grooms in my wedding, you know, so it was helpful to have somebody, a piece of home, you know, while I was out there.
Yeah, one of my best friends named Johnny Lundy, we met on our recruiting trip to Utah. Friends to this day. So, yeah. You know, as funny as too is hearing you talk about, and I heard in your voice, and you were very, you were dancing around it, but basically, you have these people, and there's all facets of coaches now, men and women in collegiate sports that are coming in, and basically auditioning, and telling your folks. Right. Luckily, I had a great recruiter who's kind of like a father figure to me, named Fred Graves, a wide receivers coach, San Diego, Utah, Buffalo Bills, San Diego Chargers, even for a little bit of time at Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. And he recruited me, and he came in and told my grandmother that he was going to take care of me. He's going to look out for me just like his own son. He did that. But I'm imagining that there's a lot of other people.
That's not the case.
That may not be the case. And they tell you, man, you know, we're going to take care of you like he's one of our own. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Who was the coach that recruited you? And what kind of did they say? Because I kind of felt a little bit in there. You were like, man, this game they running. Man, you go to college and you are handing off the most valuable thing you have. And these coaches are like, let me check it off the box. Got Quincy. Bang. We got this wide receiver.
Got a wide Let's
go to the next guy.
We got a receiver.
And we'll tell him whatever we need to tell him to get our guy so we can keep our contracts. You know, I'm a football historian. So Nebraska at that time, y'all was wearing them boo-boo Adidas.
I was going to say, as much as run the ball, just going to get a wide receiver is a special.
Wearing those Adidas now is fire, but when you was playing, they was not.
Nah, not at all.
Yeah, just for them to get a wide receiver is a victory in and of itself, as much as they run the ball.
I know, right?
Not a wide receiver. A split end. Well, it's just they switch it up. Man, so we're going to go into a part that I love. Let's talk ball. You know, we're going to talk about ball. And so I just got to start off, man, because kind of tell the fans – your fans of our podcast, you're a six-round pick on 2014, right, out of Nebraska. Right now, you know, without saying the date and all that stuff, you were released from the New York Jets, and you sustained some injuries. Take us through right now that what it has the process been for you in football. That sounds like most guys, I assume, but I'll say it, outside of your wife and your family, football really for an NFL guy, I know, is that's your first love.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're losing that first love. What has that grieving process been like for you? And walk us through that if you don't mind, or if you can, because I just went through it. About 3-4 years ago, and then we moved, and I literally had to pack up stuff that I kind of stored away in my basement. So we moved and downsized, and I say downsized, I mean we went from a family of 6 to now we're on a family of 4, and I got a sophomore, so we're in 3 years basically be me, my wife, and our youngest, Steve Smith Jr. And I was packing up and deciding, what do I want to keep? What do I want to get rid of? And there's a moment I started tearing up in my basement as I'm packing, because I'm packing up. I had my old shoulder pads. I wore the same shoulder pads my whole career. My Carolina Panthers shoulder pads were the shoulder pads I wore underneath my jersey in Baltimore. So when I was released, the only thing I told them is send my shoulder pads. And that was it. And I was packing up my stuff. And I got teary-eyed because I was like, man, I'll never be able to play ball again. And as I was putting it in there, I'm like, oh, these are my first pair of cleats that I wore, you know, my cleats that I got from the Pro Bowl, or this is a jersey I had, or a photo of of Peyton, my oldest son, who's 22 now, going to be 23 in November. But there's a picture of him when he was 8 or 9 years old. He's standing with Donovan McNabb. I'm just trying to figure out, how has that process been for you so far? And it hasn't been a long time. But how is that coming along for you, and take us through that journey, if you don't mind?
The most difficult part is just being injured for, you know, now going on 2 years. You know, it's that's been one of the hardest things, especially, you know, it being a neck injury. So, you know, I have to take it that much more serious, you know. And so the hardest thing for me last year, I could say, was, you know, it being my second time being injured.
What was that?
Coming into the facility, a neck injury. So the first year I had neck surgery. The first injury, you know, I had that was major, I had neck surgery. So I missed the whole year.
What was that entail, that neck surgery?
So I had a herniated disc. So what they had to do was they had to go in, take the disc out, put a bone in, a metal plate, some screws, and then I had to wait 9 months for it to heal up. So
what was the prognosis as they started to lay out the game plan of how to approach this injury?
They said that, you know, I had a good, you know, a good chance to come back out, play. You know, I might have small change in my range of motion, but overall I should be able to go play. So, you know, that was encouraging that first year, you know, to go out there and know that, you know, once I got this done, I could still go out and play. And so then I did in 2018. But then 2019, you know, I go back out and I hit somebody and find out that I got another herniated disc, and this one is the one below. So that's where, you know, things started to become like, dang, like.
Was it upper, lower?
Upper cervical, so in my neck. The process of being injured, you know, in the NFL, you know, you work your whole life to get here, you know, and so for injury to be the reason why, you know, you're not able to see the field, it can be kind of, you know, disheartening, depressing, in those type of ways, especially when when one's a captain, a leader, you know, you almost feel as though you're letting the team down. You know, these guys look up to you. These guys look to you to go out there and perform, to make these big plays, to score touchdowns, all those things, you know. And so sometimes it can be hard to face your teammates knowing that you're injured again, even though at the end of the day, it's really not even your fault. You know, you're not the one that went out there and purposely hurt yourself. You're just playing as hard as you can. You know, the chips fell where they fell. You know, it was a hard time for me, you know, just kind of going through, like you said, the grieving process of knowing that, you know, this second injury, you know, could make things a lot more difficult for me.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Good, do it. Good, do it. Let's get down to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from CutToItPodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sitting in your locker after you get this diagnosis and the symbolism of sitting in your locker being alone, what was that inner dialogue with you and your heart of this game that you potentially no longer can play?
Well, I think in the beginning it was probably a little bit of denial, you know, like, nah, you know, I can still do this. You know, we actually, so this past year, we, what they told me after I got hurt, after the first game, was that, you know, we would sit back and see how it heals without playing any football and reassess. So I went through the whole year, you know, knowing that there's probably nothing I could physically do to help it get better. And the only way it would really get better was basically by, you know, the grace of God, right? Like some miracle happening where the disc shrinks and it's no longer herniated and I can go back out on the football field. So knowing that, you know, that's a little bit frustrating. You almost kind of don't want to do anything, because you know there's really nothing that can help. So fast forward to the end of the season, we went to go get an MRI, and it showed no change. This is tough, you know, life. You know, this is now my second neck injury. And after a whole year, nothing has changed. I'm still not getting any better. So, you know, it thankfully, you know, that the doctors are still telling me there's a chance, but you know, I know deep down, you know, that I'm happy with what I've accomplished. And you know, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But I'm gonna you know, do what I can to get back out there if I can.
How did you approach playing the NFL? Was it a job or was it a child's game?
So I'll say this. It was a child's game up until I saw somebody get cut, right? So the first time I saw somebody get cut, I realized this is a job and I need to take it as a job. So every day I came to work. And I told everybody, you know, anybody I met, I said, I got to go to work. They'd be like, what? I'm like, yeah, this is my job, man. This is no longer just, this isn't just a game. This is a business. And if I don't look at it this way, you know, I could be the next one out of here. So every day was a work, you know, every day I came to work. It wasn't, I was coming to go play football.
So you treat it like a career. What were the highs of playing ball?
Fans. Right, going out there scoring touchdowns in front of the fans. I think that's probably the highs of it. You know, being able to kind of put it all together and show the world what you're capable of doing. You know, making those big plays. You know, hearing the audience. You know, the crowd getting loud. You know, especially when they hear the ball in the air. I remember one of my favorite plays was against New England, 2017-16. Scored a touchdown in the back corner. And the ball was in the air as I was running. So all you hear is just the crowd. I look up, the ball's in the air. I catch it, come down, the crowd gets even louder. You know, it's a feeling that you can't really, you know, put anywhere else.
What was your professional goals when you first started, once you got finally got a taste of being a wide receiver in the NFL?
Oh, professional goals. I mean, I had a lot, man, you know, and I'd say, you know, the biggest one was to just be known as a professional, honestly. You know, it's a simple one. It's a small one. But I knew, you know, there were so many things outside of my control. You know, going to the Pro Bowl, going to the Super Bowl. You know, I think those are my goals. But I knew that, you know, it's a team game, right? So there's going to be so many different things that are a factor of that. So I knew that the biggest one that I wanted, no matter what, was that I came to work and people knew that I was going to be a hard worker, that I was going to come in every day, and you knew that Quincy was going to have his heart added on and that he was going to be the guy that you could look to be working the hardest on the field.
At times I felt very awkward, kind of struggled with being comfortable in my own skin. How comfortable were you in your own skin as an NFL football player?
I say I was comfortable, but I say that, you know, it was kind of like there wasn't the complete self-awareness there, right? Like, I think that we get, especially now in the age of social media, when you get on social, when you become a professional football player, you almost feel like you have to live up to this facade. You know, you have to be perfect. You got to be like all these guys on social media showing and flaunting and all those other things. And I feel like a lot of guys kind of fall into the trap, you know, and so the minute that I kind of like was brought back down, like, no, this isn't what I need. You know, being on social media kind of helped me kind of see that, you know, all these things on social media, it's so much fake. You know what I mean? Like you just see the people trying to live up to something, you know, or live up to the character that they feel like they have to be. And so that's kind of why I took the break, was because, you know, I didn't want to be fed into that. I didn't really care to see it anymore. And, you know, I wanted to just live a life where I felt like I didn't need to live up to anybody else's expectations, you know, because life is already hard enough, you know.
So what led to you taking a social media break?
Being hurt, you know. I think I just was like, you know, I don't care to post about football or see football, you know. Being hurt kind of just like made me like take a step back, you know, being hurt a second time, I mean. So, you know, but it was a healthy break, man. It felt good.
What would older Quincy tell younger Quincy entering into his first NFL training camp? So the older Quincy is like, look, let me tell you what's going to happen. This is how it's going down. Mm-hmm. Knowing everything you know right now.
I would tell myself to stretch. flexibility, yoga in some way, do that as much as you can. Do so much flexibility. Be one of the most flexible. And also really work on cardio. Those are the two things that throughout my career, I wish I would have done more of, is really working on my cardio and really working on my flexibility.
That's it?
Yeah. I mean, listen. I felt like
I'm disappointed, but I kind of am. You going to your first training camp, Quincy? What do you got?
Working stretch.
That would have taken you so much further.
No money advice.
I didn't need to. I wasn't spending crazy. There were certain things that I just already knew, but that was one thing I wish I would have known.
That brother just needs to stretch.
Hey, I'm about to get married. You got any advice, Pop? Hey, kiss her.
Hey, some people need that, though.
I know, but hey, I was like, my man Q, he over here dropping knowledge. Stretch.
He was looking for the perspective answer. He gave you the
straight C-ball, hit ball.
Yep.
Oh, man. All right, so we're gonna wrap this up, but man, we're gonna do one of our things called the Deep Three. Deep Three is we're gonna ask you. I'm reading this. Hey, that's pretty good. Deep Three is gonna be three introspective things that we just want to dive deep in with you,
Quincy. Once you knew you could make football into a career, who did you play for, and what was your why?
I played for my family. Yeah, I definitely played for my family, and so they were my why too. You know, like, being able to just help them out. You know, they did so much to come to this country, you know, to sacrifice so much, you know, to risk so much, to leave their family, you know, to create a family here. You know, I just wanted to be able to do what I can to kind of repay them.
Well, how could you tell your wife the impact she's had on your life as a football player? You know, just in case you want to let her listen when we drop this. Brown points.
Honestly, man, I tell her all the time, man. She's been a huge piece of my piece, right? Like, you know, she's helped me be at peace, you know, when things have been so stressful, you know, to come home, you know, to a wife that's been so supportive, has been, you know, the most amazing part of my career, you know, to have somebody that you can to just be at home, to de-stress, you know, talk about the things that go on, and you guys can just come together in harmony. You know, that's a beautiful thing that, you know, I hope most guys get to experience.
What do you still want out of your professional career, and how are you going to keep your mental game strong?
I want a Super Bowl, man. I want a Super Bowl out of this, man. I think, you know, when you make it past the average, you know, 3 years, you know, I think, you know, one of the big goals outside of your own individual goals is a big one, Super Bowl, you know, and I think in order for me to get there, you know, mentally, you know, it's just about staying focused on that goal, you know, creating systems in order for me to reach that goal, you know, and I feel like, you know, I've had a lot of great mentors, you know, and so, you know, the next time I hit that field, I know that, you know, I'll definitely be prepared.
What was your why while you were playing? And then also, what's your why now?
Probably the first 8 or 9 years of my NFL career, I played for myself. Hmm. And then I started to realize that this was going to – I was running out of steam. And it was really something that was extremely hard to keep up. And so I had some things personally happen in my life, and over time will reveal them more and more. Mm-hmm. And start to realize that the selfishness and just that inner dialogue within myself was not positive. And I started to need to refocus and really see. And so I kind of took that time to really say, okay, God, I've played enough for myself. I need to start playing for you. And when I say playing for God, meaning allowing him to really direct my steps.
Wow.
And direct my steps in understanding why am I here, what's the purpose. And so realizing that even now being done playing, and in my last couple of years, is I played understanding and trained with a scientific and a holistic approach of myself and how I can get the best out of myself, how I can get the best out of manipulating my mind into believing that no one liked me and no one believed in me. And then I started to realize, as I started kind of relying on God to direct my steps, is I found myself in the middle of working out, asking God to help me get through this workout at 32, 33, 34 years old, and started to realize I needed people around me to help me. I needed people in my life that would speak life into me, not just teach me how to save a whole bunch of money, teach me how to acquire materialistic things, acquire things that will bring value to increase my status on social media and all that stuff, but really to try to live a legacy, to try to have something that my wife, my family, my boys, and my daughter would be proud of. Also that when they hear me speak, that they don't cringe of the things that I say and how I articulate them. Because a lot of times in the past I've cussed is really a shortcut. My father-in-law said that he believes that people that cuss only are masking for the lack of words that they have. And it's always stood out. And he's also a man who taught me how to tie a tie.
Okay.
So he is my wife's father, but however, I call him dad as well, because he has shown me some things. And so what I mean by that is, by the age of 11 or 12, my oldest son, Peyton, knows how to tie a tie. My son, Boston, knows how to tie a tie. And Deuce, who's 6 years old, who wears dad's ties, right? So giving them something more than money, giving them something, teaching them how to truly fish. And because we can learn how to cook, but do we know how to fish and cook? And so one of the coolest things, my why is my oldest son, we were texting the other day, and he's on his own, and he's starting to cook. And he says something to me that warmed my heart, and I know it's from the Lord, which is, I said, I see you. And he said, you know, you keep this up, you know, you're going to be cooking. And his text said, just trying to be like you, Dad. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, you come over on it's still good. So the weather's still good. So come on over and I'll teach you how to, you know, work on the grill.
Yeah.
His reply was even deeper, which was, I would love nothing more. And I didn't even reply. I just stared at it. And I've still been staring at it. I've been staring at the text for 2 days now. That's my why. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It. Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr. That is me. Is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production manager Sarah Pollock, theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.